that every word and work of ours may always begin from thee, and by thee be happily ended, through Christ our Lord. Amen.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
I'm glad to welcome here you here this morning. It's good to be with you again. This year, 1951, will be the seventh year that we have observed National Employee the Physically Handicapped Week. In those 7 years, we have made a lot of progress. The needs of the physically handicapped are much better understood throughout the country than they have ever been before. Many of the old prejudices against employing handicapped workers are disappearing. It is now well recognized that employment of the physically handicapped is a natural and very valuable part of our economic life. The figures show that this is true. Secretary Tobin and Administrator Ewing will give you all the details, but it is very impressive to me that during this past year, the public employment services were able to find 100,000 more jobs for the handicapped people than during the year before. That's a gain of more than 50%. This kind of progress shows the value of the work of this committee. Which has brought private citizens and private organizations and state and federal agencies together in one great effort. Much good has been done in these last years, but there is a great deal more that we must do. Our goal should be to see that every physically handicapped person who wants to work and who is able to work gets a chance at a job that he can do. I say this not only because we ought to do it as a matter of decency, but also because there is so much our handicapped citizens can do for us if we help them to gain employment. We need these people in our labor force. We need them badly. We need to use their skills and energy in our great program of defense production to help us win the struggle for a just and lasting peace. The production job ahead of us calls for the fullest and wisest use of all our resources, and especially of our manpower. We are now employing more than 62.5 million people in this country. As defense production expands, there are going to be more and more jobs, and it will be harder and harder to find enough people to fill them. A great proportion of able-bodied young people who in earlier years would have been starting work for the first time are being drawn instead into the armed services. These conditions are bound to continue for some time. This means that in our national interest, it is urgent for us to make full use of the skills and abilities of all our handicapped citizens. Those who have been trained should be employed at their highest level of skill. Those who have not yet been trained should be given rehabilitation and vocational training. The year 1951 poster puts the problem very clearly when it says, America needs all of us. I think that you should hammer this point over and over again. Giving a physically handicapped a job is not a charity. It's not just a gratuitous kindness. These people need jobs, it is true. But the more important fact is that the country needs their help. They're given the right jobs fitted to their capabilities. They can do just as much as anyone else to increase the production of this great nation. The polio victim, the spastic, the blind, the deaf, and the amputee, as well as those suffering from heart disease and other disabilities, can all do their part. All they need is a reasonable chance and good old American fair play. Once on the right job, they ask no favors of anyone. I hope that this committee will make every employer in the country aware of the fact that hiring the physically handicapped is not simply a humanitarian obligation, but a real business opportunity. These people include some of the best workers we have. They are people who have suffered the shock of being disabled and have gone through the physical and mental suffering of being crippled or blinded or otherwise injured. And in spite of all that, they've picked themselves up again, mastered their handicap, and fitted themselves, sometimes through years of vigorous training, for jobs which they can do. It takes a lot of character to go through an experience like that, and in any kind of employment, I don't care what it is, it's character that counts. I'm going to have the pleasure this morning of presenting a trophy on behalf of this committee. This award is to be given annually to a handicapped individual selected by the committee for the best performance of the year on behalf of the physically handicapped. The trophy was designed and made by four severely handicapped persons. The young man who has been selected to receive it this year is also a severely handicapped person. He is an employer in Chicago. He's in business for himself. He's successful in that business. Today, he employs 80 persons, and 60 of them, three-fourths of them, are handicapped. Some of them are blind, some are deaf, some have lost an arm or a leg. But that plant of his, during World War II, outproduced larger concerns that employed more workers. It did such fine work that it received the Army and Navy E Award. I'm very proud of that young man. George Barr is his name. He's made this country a better place to live in. And he has shown what men can do if they have the courage and the will to do it. There's a lesson for all of us in this story. That lesson is that you never know what you can do until the going gets rough. The true measure of a man's ability, the true measure of the character and ability of a nation, comes out only in a struggle against difficulty. A lot of people are saying these days that the people of our country are soft. They're saying that we've had things too easy for too long, and that we do not have the strength of character to impose restrictions on ourselves and to undergo hardship in time of crisis. I simply don't believe it. I just don't think it's true. When I look at the record of our physically handicapped and what they've done and are doing in American industry, I know it's not true. If any further proof is needed, we can find it in the record of our soldiers, sailors, marines, and airmen in Korea. There's nothing soft about the job our fighting men have been doing over there. And there's nothing soft about the way our physically handicapped workers have been doing their jobs here at home. If those among us who've been disabled can pick up their lives again and fit themselves for jobs in spite of their handicaps, I'm sure that the rest of us can do what we're called upon to do in this period of national defense. This nation's not soft. I believe they have the same kind of character we've always had. I believe we will have the strength and the know-how to carry on through these difficulties. And I'm here to tell you that I think this nation can do anything it wants to. And I think it does those things when it's on the right track and at no other time. I know we can face up to any problem that lies ahead. both at home and abroad. And I am confident that with the help of God, we can reach our goal of a just and lasting peace.
Remarks at the signing of the Philippine Mutual Defense Treaty, August 30th, 1951.
Ladies and gentlemen, we meet here today to sign a treaty of mutual defense between the Republic of the Philippines and the United States of America. The chief executives of both nations are present to honor this occasion. President Quirino and Secretary Romulo, I extend to you and to the members of the Philippine delegation a most cordial welcome. The Mutual Defense Treaty is the natural outgrowth of the relationship of over half a century between the Philippines and the United States. During that time, the United States has helped the Filipino people prepare to exercise the supreme political rights and responsibilities of sovereignty. On July 4, 1946, following the most devastating war in history, and in spite of the appalling effect of that war on Philippine life, the transfer of responsibility was reached. From then on, the relationship between the two countries was that of two sovereign nations with a common heritage of and dedication to democratic ideals. We have made certain commitments to each other which led to the present Mutual Defense Treaty. The trade agreement of 1946 recognized that the economic ties which had been developed over a period of 50 years could not, without harmful effect, be severed overnight. The trade agreement provided for an 8-year period of free trade to be followed by a 20-year period of graduated tariffs until in 1973 each country would levy upon the products of the other the same tariff it would impose upon those of a third country. Also, because of the many Americans who had made their homes in the Philippines and had invested in the future of the country, it was provided that until 1974, Americans would be given national treatment in the development of Philippine resources. The Philippine Rehabilitation Act of 1946 was recognition by the American people that the Philippines had borne a disastrous share of the ravages caused by the war in the Pacific, and that assistance was required. Aid could not restore in full the human and material destruction, but it could provide a strong foundation on which to build. The accomplishments of the first 5 years were impressive, but we have yet to realize peace, and we live amid the pressures and disturbances of a sorely troubled world. It became apparent that Philippine economy would require further help in order to preserve advances already made. President Quirino and President Truman agreed that an economic survey mission should be sent to the Philippines to make a study of conditions and recommendations for their improvement. The recommendations of that mission resulted in the sightings at Baguio on November 27, 1950, of an agreement for a program of long-range economic development. Under that agreement, President Quirino recommended to the Philippine Congress a program of greatly increased taxation and minimum wage legislation. President Truman recommended to the Congress of the United States a program of economic aid designed to help the Philippines achieve in the shortest possible time a self-supporting economy through increased productivity, with particular attention to the betterment of the lot of the farmer and the worker. Although only a few months have passed since the beginning of this program, economic conditions in the Philippines have greatly improved, thanks to the vigorous steps which you, President Quirino, and your fellow countrymen have taken. I believe that they will continue to improve through our mutual efforts. The Bases Agreement of 1947 recognized the importance to both nations of the defense of the Philippines and granted the United States the right to maintain and to garrison bases in the Philippines. The Military Assistance Agreement of 1947 recognized the importance of developing the Philippine armed forces as rapidly as possible to a point where they could effectively maintain internal law and order. To that end, the treaty provided for a United States military advisory group to assist the group to assist and advise the Philippines on military and naval matters, for the furnishing to the Philippines of equipment and supplies, for the procurement by the Philippines of military supplies in the United States, and for the training in the United States of Philippine military personnel. The Philippines has also shared importantly in current programs of military assistance. The problems of internal security have proven more difficult than they should have been because communist aggression against the Philippines, as elsewhere, operates from the inside as well as from the outside, 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 as well as from the allied, 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 as well as from the outside. The Hak Balahak movement, servile to an ideology which is repellent to all Filipino traditions and interests, has been doing everything within its power to destroy the Filipino nation and place it under a foreign and oppressive yoke. We rejoice that the Philippine Armed Forces have made impressive progress during recent months in breaking the military strength of this rebellious group. At the same time, the Philippines pushes resolutely ahead in creating economic and social conditions under which conspiracy cannot disturb domestic tranquility.